This week on RSBNB Update, the Christmas update is here, and it really does remind us of classic Christmas events. We run through Christmas, the Daily Challenges rework, activity pet polls, and the latest archaeology journal. Plus, a message from Maud Warden and our Christmas schedule. This is RSBNB Update, episode 756, recorded Wednesday, December 18th, 2019. A Simple Christmas. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update, the last regularly scheduled RSBNB Update of 2019. It always amazes me when we get to this point, Hannes. Because, I mean, we do the show each and every year. The months and days just go by. And lo and behold, here we are in December again.
Again. Comes around every year.
Yeah. And, you know, there's been Decembers that we would prefer not to remember. There have been Decembers we do want to remember. One of the ones that we prefer not to remember is when a few days before Christmas Eve, we had to do Sliske's Endgame and do a podcast on that subject matter. Which was very painful for those of you guys who have done Sliske's Endgame at the time. But then, on the other hand, there have been really good ones where Christmas events were just filled with lots of festive Christmas spirit, which is excellent. But nonetheless, we're going to talk about all that Christmas stuff, the daily challenges rework, Java, the activity pets poll, and, of course, the patch notes. But if you're joining us for the first time, follow along with the show notes at update.rsbnb.com. And I'm Shane12088 in game, and he is Tannis79. All right, so Christmas. We were told that the Christmas event would be small. And, you know, this year it is really small, isn't it?
Well, I'll tell you what, I never believed in the war on Christmas until I went to do the Christmas event this year. And I'll be damned, I think there was a war on Christmas, Shane.
Yeah, because what we got is Santa is back at the Grand Exchange in Varrock. There's the giant cracker that's there with all of its usual holiday reward items. And each day you can find a missing present for Santa. And once you find 24 missing presents, which takes us to January 5th, you will get a Christmas jumper, a Christmas title, and I believe the other item is something to do with reindeer. I forget the exact name of it, but that's really how small it is with this. So
it's a jumper, Rudolph jumper.
Rudolph jumper, the Christmas title, yeah. And the craft paper, of course.
Yeah. But you can get the craft paper just from scaling. Anyway.
Yeah, you get ton of it. You get a ton of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, one other interesting thing with this that people might not have recognized is that the Lumbridge Crater has been transformed for the January warmer. All the bank chests and whatnot are already there. It's just not an active event at this point. And, you know, the first present was right next to the crater at Lumbridge, and I noticed that. I was like, oh, this looks interesting, but obviously there's not going to be a game update until something to the effect of the 5th of January, so that's why they put the gear in the Lumbridge crater there already for the winter warmer. I think we should, you know, just mention that was in behind the scenes. That's just going to be a community event or centered around the new year where there's extra bank chests and the like, and you're going to be able to get some extra bonus XP there. And, you know, it's just meant to be a social community gathering point, maybe waiting for a New Year's Eve to come in or something, do it along that side of things. That's how I envision that happening. So,
yeah, well, I mean, you know, on the one hand, it is smaller.
Yeah.
And it is more traditional.
It is very traditional. And, you know, this goes back to, you know, when RS2 first launched, and even old school, because, you know, all we used to have in old school for Christmas events was, oh, we're dropping Santa hats randomly around Christmas time, right? And, you know, I don't necessarily...
Turned out to be a good present.
Yeah. You know, I don't necessarily know that people need to get angry over this or get upset about this.
No, I mean, I think this is It's one of those things you hear people that say, you know, oh, I'd love to go back to like the older style, you know, Christmas event or holiday events. And then when they do, you're reminded of, oh, this is the old style, because you've been spoiled for so many years of like some pretty big, pretty great Christmas events, you know, and
yeah.
So I think there's that disconnect there, you know, you're like, you think you want something, but then you get it and you're like, yeah, I kind of liked it better before.
Yeah. And, you know, I didn't even look at what Old School was doing for Christmas this year. I don't do that. But, you know, I'd imagine as part of the Old School mantra, they do need to keep it traditional in that way as well. And it'd be interesting to compare the two, I think, based on that, because, you know, many people always, like you said, have said, oh, you know, maybe we should go back to how things used to be and see if we can, you know, try and replicate some of that old feeling. And that's one thing I never really understood, is what that old feeling was. You know, was it just having a Christmas-themed guy in the game that you go talk to for a little reward? Because some years, that's all it was, right? In 2004, you go talk to Santa and you got a rubber chicken.
I think it's more of a it's a fondness more of of what you remember that time being like.
Yeah.
So, like, for me, you know, there was two Christmas events, you know, the one that was had the big feast table and the feeding the reindeer and
yeah.
snowball fights. Just that was such a great year, but it was, you know, probably only a few. I don't think it was too many years of me starting playing, or at least getting serious about playing.
Yeah.
And so, like, that's nostalgic for me.
The two I always go to are the one where, you know, we did have the toy shop in Drainer Village. People got to relive a bit of that in the event a few years back. I forget exactly what year it was. And then the one, of course, where we had the crater area turned into the winter scene with all the little wintry events on it. So those are the two that I always remember. But the Old School Christmas event, let's read a bit of it. Angry children have gathered in Varrock, and it seems like they're protesting against something. But who's that jolly-looking fellow standing beside them? Why, that's Santa. What on Gielinor is going on here? Speak to Santa by the Varrock fountain to learn what epic quest awaits you this year. Cement your place on his nice list to earn an all-new Christmas reward, plus you'll receive all the events from Christmas's past. And I'm guessing the reward is a puppy with a Santa hat.
Oh, son of a... Okay.
Well, there you go.
How funny is it, though, that, like, Old School having protesters
yeah.
on there?
It's yeah. like, that's so... And I think that's the message to take away from that. Yeah. But back to reality with RS3. For people who didn't get their snowboards in 2017, you can claim snowboards from Diego in Drainer, and you can use them during the Christmas event as well. So that's good fun.
That was a pretty... That was a decent Christmas.
Yeah, it was, and I think that's the one I remember as being the one in the crater. So it's good to have little emanations of that coming back. But I think we should talk about the Daily Challenges rework now, shouldn't we?
Yeah.
Rift Dungeoneering?
Rift, dude. Yeah. I'm sorry for anybody coming up. You'll never know how good it was.
Yeah, it was upwards of 150, 180K sometimes of the XP.
Yeah, I mean,
you double that, you're well over 200 and close to 300.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
So, the Daily Challenges rework we detailed last week and the week before in the live stream and Daily Challenges blog, respectively. What they have done with this is they've made it so that the Daily Challenges can first and foremost be completed from anywhere. You don't need to go and turn them in, which is, I think, the biggest thing that comes from this.
Yes, and I will say this. I don't say this a lot, but whoever did the this part of the news post. Good job. Like, did you, I thought it was pretty well worded. Stayed away.
Mod Shogun has a special gift for everyone this year in the form of the daily challenges we work. From now, daily challenges will be less intensive, more rewarding, and claimable from anywhere in the game world, which is what they want it to be. You know, rather than making, you know, 3 or 4 Supreme Overload cells, it's now just brew 10 potions, and I chose to brew Ceridomen brews because I will find those useful at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's... I mean, all in all, it's actually...
It's a lot
it's
better.
A good update.
It's a lot
yeah, better. It's a good update. I mean, the Dungeoneering hurts, of course, but all in all, it's I think this works. So
and it is
much
a massive
better.
Buff for most of the skills that are on the board. I think there's only 2 or 3 of them where it's not a buff. Dungeoneering being one. I'm not sure what the other ones were, but you know, just looking at that, for somebody who's coming up and you want to level up, say crafting, that's expensive, or construction. This is a way of doing it that I feel sits in the vein of Yak Track. And you know how much of a fan we've been of Yak Track. And for everybody listening, you're going to hear a lot about Yak Track in the year in review show that will be coming out in 2 weeks' time from this one. Clip shows next week. But that is something that, you know, just having a way to kind of go and say, hey, what can I do today? Maybe I should go do some woodcutting. Maybe I should go do some herb lore. And the daily challenges system will provide that to you as a way of doing so. And I think that's really excellent for this, especially with the buff. Because if you're level 99, you're going to be getting 68k XP a day for this, for one of these achievements. So
right, and you can double that. I mean,
exactly.
So, I mean, you could always be doubling your dailies anyway.
Yeah.
So,
let's say someone was level 70, that's going to be 20k. If you're level 80, that's going to be 31.8. Level 90, 48.9. And an inexpensive skill for a quick little thing like that, that's going to be wonderful. So,
well, it's also nice, like, I mean, for a grindy skill like a runecrafting or divination. I mean, I know these caches, but
yeah, it just spices it up further because you had people who are training divination with caches, and that's not the way divination should be, right? You should be interacting with it on its own merits.
Yeah, well, and I guess there is the Guthix memory place. I always forget about, so I guess that's an option too.
All right. So
yeah,
the agility one is going to be completing 5 agility laps. Construction is make 5 pieces of flat packed or normal furniture.
See, nice, very nice.
Divination, collect 25 memories.
Oh yeah.
Farming,
these are cool.
Check the health of a patch or an allotment, herb patch or farm animal 1 time. Fire making, 25 logs. Fishing, 25 fish. Fletching, 150 arrows. And these are just some examples. These are the ones on the wiki. I'm not sure if there's more beyond that. One question I had with this is, do you have any idea why I'd be getting crafting daily challenges even though I have those turned off and I'm 99 crafting?
You have them turned off?
Yeah. And I got crafting challenges still coming up.
No, it sounds like a bug.
I mean, we'll see if it bumps off the list here, but
you shouldn't be getting anything if it's turned off.
Yeah, because I got a crafting one. The only ones I have turned on are Slayer, Invention. I guess there's not an invention one, is there? Slayer, Dungeoneering. Those are the only ones I should be getting. So, I don't know. I don't know. That was a bit odd to me, seeing crafting pop up.
Yeah,
99 crafting. So I'll keep a watch on that and file a bug if need be. And then I think the last thing to mention on this is the new user interface, which is fitting in with the modern aesthetic of the game, and also looks like it'll degrade nicely down for mobile, which is what you want things to do in this day and age. So.
And that's where everyone's going to be going to claim their
treasure hunter keys and XP for that. Yeah.
Right. So. Okay.
Yep.
Where is that located now?
It's in the same place it used to be. Click on the adventures menu and go to challenges tab.
Oh, okay. In there. So we can just claim it.
Yep. Right there. Right
claim
at the top.
Spot there. Oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah. It's all there still. All right. I think we can move on to the activity pets at that point, because that's what we got next up on the docket here, unless there's anything else about daily challenges you'd like to discuss.
No.
All right. Let's do it then. So the activity pet polls are up, and, you know, I like the concept phase more than I like what we're getting a chance to vote on. I don't know how you feel about that.
Yes. I like the categories better than I like the representatives of each. I don't know. I like the categories.
So first we're voting for clue scrolls and areas. So going through the clue scrolls one, you can have Meek, the lucky meerkat, Cassie, the treasure octopus, Jellio, the spaded chest, Trenchy, the detective Trenchy, and Artemis, the compass deer.
See, does any of that stand out to you?
No.
Or scream clue scroll?
No, I got to vote for the chest, the spaded chest. I haven't voted yet in this because I wanted to do that on here. And we got a three-way tie between Meek the meerkat, Trenchy the detective, Trenchy, and Artemis the compass deer. They're at 30, 29, and 29.
Wow.
That's not going to provide much clarity for that.
No.
Because, you know, you open up to the community, but then the community produces a split result like this. I don't know that you can just take the one that was on top, even if it won by such a small margin.
Well, because then you're guaranteed to piss off 2/3 of the community, no matter what.
It's a cosmetic. Is that really going to piss people off?
I don't know. I would hope not.
All right. What did you vote for? None of the above?
No.
Okay. Let's look at the area ones. So choices for the area ones are Allison the alpaca. I don't want an alpaca. I'm sorry. Nico the chameleon. Skips the touring cave goblin. Moon the adaptive creature that changes appearance based on where you are. And Pico the pangolin. I'm sorry. I have to say none of the above.
None of the above.
I'm just going through these, but they just don't jump out to me.
But even better than, if you have to pick something, think about this. They're going to give you a cave goblin. Didn't we help out the cave goblin? Aren't they sentient beings? How's that going to be a pet?
Yeah. That one's at 8%. Moon,
like,
the
is
adaptive.
That like giving us a house elf? Like, we're getting Dobby. What's going on here? I don't know. It sounds like indentured servitude here.
That's funny. Moon, the adaptive creatures, in first on this one with 37%. Then Allison the alpaca at 19%, Nico the chameleon at 18%, Pico the penguin at 16%, and Skips the touring cave goblin at 8%. So, at least we got resolution on that one.
Yeah.
I wonder if these polls are binding.
Well, nothing's like...
Nothing has to be 100% binding.
I mean, we live through Tuska, right?
Right. I wish we had a better
choice.
But
what area is it representing?
It's going to represent all the eras. Let's see, if I go to the dev blog.
But that doesn't make any sense. I was just like, here's a bed. It represents everywhere.
Hang on. So Moon is winning the area one, and the... And Meek is winning the other one. So Moon and Meek. And there's a dev blog on the website that was posted earlier this week for the activity pets, which I can pull up here and give more information on this. So for the area pets, Moon is a highly adaptive creature in tune with nature, gaining the ability to change its appearance. And examples are some of these variations, including aquatic regions, wilderness, forest, desert, and Anachronia.
Oh, well, at least that's the best. Seems like out of that. At least it can look a little different.
Yeah. Then, for the treasure ones, if we look at... where is Meek? Meek is, of course, the lucky meerkat, and the idea behind this one is that it found a rare dye while searching for caskets, and the dye was enchanted to float and never run out of its contents. So it's effectively a dye bottle with a meerkat sitting on top, and it will leave a dye when it moves.
Huh.
Oh, and here's why it's winning. It could potentially change its color by adding a specific dye to the pet.
Oh, okay. It's a dyeable pet.
A dyeable pet.
Okay.
Because you know how much those dyes are worth, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Millions, sometimes much more than that. So, all right, we'll be watching for when the next vote comes up, but I hate to say it, I'm just not impressed with the choices I had for this one.
Yeah, it's nothing that I would, like, strive for or go out of my way for.
I'm glad I've said none of the above on the area ones. And for clue scrolls, it doesn't look like my casket is winning. So, all right. So before we move on to the patch notes this week, we're going to have a bit of a discussion on a message that was put out from Mod Warden. And yeah, for those of you guys wondering, we do have a time-traveling device, and it's called the Magic... The magic of editing, because this came out on the Thursday after we recorded the podcast, and we just wanted to have a bit of a brief rundown of Mod Warden's post, and Sirion has graciously decided to stick around from our last show to provide his opinion on this message from Mod Warden going into 2020. So,
hello, I snuck into the episode.
Yeah, it's really interesting how you managed to do that. Time travel, tell me how.
Let's not do that.
So
it's a secret.
This post came out, and you know, we normally have a year ahead post that shows the roadmap going forward, but the roadmap we have covers until June, as we saw at RuneFest, and we're not getting an updated one, at least for the foreseeable future here, because Mod Warden wants to focus on other things, in particular getting archaeology out and changing the way things are done inside of Jagex, which, I mean, we talked about this before. He's the new executive producer. He's there to push a vision through, and we're going to get to that. But I think the biggest piece of news that comes out of this is that archaeology is going to be delayed by a little bit.
No!
It's still coming. It's still being worked on. But it's not going to ship at the end of January as expected, and we don't have a date for it. Do you guys want to speculate at what this might be mean for time moving forward then on archaeology?
So I'm never really opposed to a delay. Actually, that, I mean, it just means we're going to get a better product in the end. So I wouldn't be surprised if it went as far as like an April or May. But if that happens, we're just remember you're going to get a better product. And I don't mind that. I'd much rather think of it this way. Like if Invention had been pushed back originally, we probably would have had a more complete skill at launch. So,
yeah, I'd be probably willing to say end of February or March, maybe. I mean, this is just 100% speculation off the cuff based on, you know, the fact they want to put more polish into it. So,
it looks like it's mostly a polish and small improvements thing. So I don't expect it to need to take too much longer. So I think we should look at March. But, no, I think it fits with where he comes from. Like Blizzard is like when it's done, right? And it looks from the rest of the post that he wants to focus on quality and not stick to arbitrary timelines. And I think that's what where he is like, I'm not going to give you a year ahead. I don't want to give you dates. I want to ship you things when they're done. And I can live with that. I'm aboard with
that. Me too. And, you know, it all comes back to action, action, action being his keyword that he brought to us as the player base, right? Because it's about delivering and about showing results, not necessarily making promises that are empty. And you'll note in this post here that there are no promises except for one, but we'll get to that at the end. And, you know, one really interesting thing with this is he says this is a brand new era for RuneScape. And we knew that because of the monetization changes were happening, but it's also happening on the content side. And the key is, he says that it will take a few years to unfold, and it's becoming clearer to him every day of what it will look like. The plan isn't finalized yet, and he wants this to be supported across all the development teams. And what's effectively happening here is the way updates are crafted are being changed. The way updates are released are probably going to be changed as well. And, you know, I think we're going to just see in general a whole macro level of change in terms of the type of content that comes out with this, in terms of going back to what the players want. And he says this right here: what content do you all engage with the most, and what are you telling us that you want? So I think by asking these two questions, that's part of the direction he wants to go. But keep in mind, we're dealing with a game here that has years of legacy to it, and that's why it's going to take so long for it to turn around. It's that metaphor we've used of turning a ship around.
Yeah, I think we all sort of knew that he was going to bring change. We just didn't quite know how far he was willing to go, and it looks he's wanting to go all the way, which, you know, I'm supportive of. This is a change that RuneScape hasn't had since its original inception. A lot of the content update model still holds the legacy ideas of when RuneScape was a tiny Java game on the web, right? Like, a lot of that stuff never was.
And you could ship an update in 3 weeks.
Exactly. Like, nobody looked at, like, what RuneScape is today, put like a big sort of magnifying glass over it, and like, what can we actually do? What's realistic? And what is the best thing to do? And that is why it is so great that somebody came in from the outside with no emotional attachment to the past. It's like, all right, I'm going to come in here and I'm going to shake things up. And that's great. And that's going to take time, because change takes time.
Yeah. But you know what just hit me? You know who he reminds me of?
Hmm?
If we're applying Star Trek to this?
Well,
Captain Pike.
Yes. That's really who he is. He's like, he comes in, he immediately has a presence, and he's like, all right, we got to do things a bit differently. And you all can come along or you can leave.
And everybody can also come to him and express how they feel, whether they be J-Mods or us in the player base, which is something that Pike was known for.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I realized that a while back there was something that was familiar about Warden, but it finally hit me in reading this post. That's what it is.
And that is why the person who is so excited about archaeology, am okay with this, because it is for a good cause. Because that is, like, there's one sentence in that post. I'll see if I can quickly find it. I could find it before. Yeah, I don't think I can quickly find it.
I think I know which one you're talking about. It's the one: to deliver this will require new development standards, new production process and production plans, new tools and pipeline optimizations. And for someone in software dev, what does that mean to the rest of us?
It means that they are probably still using software and IDs from 10 years ago. And that's too old, right? They don't have the modern infrastructure, but they also like I said, they're so attached to this old idea of weekly updates and all that stuff. And, you know, there's a lot of, like, the way the teams work, the way they have, like, leaderships and sub-teams and design processes and who makes decisions, all that stuff probably carried on from, you know, when the Gower brothers were still in charge, right? And everybody maybe had a say. The company has grown, the game has grown. They need to basically turn it all down and go back to the foundations and rebuild this from scratch to make it fit the current situation.
Yeah, and you know, he says that thing next. He says the RuneScape team is growing and these teams must be effectively and speedily working together on common goals. I am even looking at how we can build more creativity and fun into our day-to-day work environment, all of which should translate into a better product, meaning happier players and developers who are proud of their work.
Yeah, exactly. Because we know how much RuneScape is spaghetti code as well, right? Yep. Like, a lot of this...
Or technical debt, to use a different term.
Like, a lot of these updates come to be like, okay, how can we make this update? How can we make it work in the game without sort of thinking about long-term health of the engine and all that stuff? And
dead inputs.
Dead inputs, yeah. Like, that is like a legacy issue. And it takes a completely different mindset from everyone to sort of spend a bit more time on writing the code, but making it more future-proof. That needs a different mindset from the developer writing the code, but it also requires a different mindset from like the people in charge, because you need to start allocating more time to your updates, because you need to give people enough time to, you know, unspaghettify code. And that is, I think, what he is talking about here. He is talking about, you know, we're going to stop dealing with all this weekly update nonsense. We are going to start thinking about what's the best for the health of the game, and that is preventing bugs, preventing having to dig into hundreds of lines of spaghetti code. We're going to focus on the health of this game, not just on like what content we produce, but also on how we produce that content.
Duty of care as well.
Exactly.
I think I just got more excited about 2020. I don't think that was possible.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I feel like Mod Warden gives off this kind of this air about him where he's like a firm but fair kind of boss, I would imagine.
Captain Pike.
So, like, you can – it feels like when he says that we're going to push something back, it's not just an excuse. He's going to hold people's feet to the fire, and it'll – when we get it, we'll be like when it is ready. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like we can have confidence that it was necessary. I don't think it's the kind of person that would say that it was if it wasn't.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Totally agree with that. And I just hope the community doesn't take this post the wrong way.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. I don't know.
But
I would have... Maybe this post, I feel like this post might have been better at the beginning of the year.
You mean when there's a live stream to respond? But keep in mind, there was a live stream today where they did unveil this. So,
right. But it would have just been like a new year. This is what we're doing.
Okay.
And, you know what I mean? Instead of leaving off, I mean, yes, it's optimistic for us because we're like – diving in and really looking at it, but if someone's just reading it real quick, all they might just have a takeaway at, oh, archaeology's being delayed.
Whoop-de-doo.
Yeah.
Right.
But they did give something in return.
Yeah, and that's what the next thing we want to talk about is that the PBM hub will be arriving in early 2020, and it's going to be known as War's Retreat. And this came out of Game Jam, of course, and they say that previously the reserve of MaxCape owners, War's Retreat is being brought into the game proper and is your one-stop shop for all your bossing needs. And obviously people are going to want this prior to archaeology when they lose access to the Max Guild. So I think there's going to be lots of people who are happy about this. And what we saw for the PVM hub when it was showcased at Game Jam looks good. And we said that even as non-PVMers.
Yeah.
I'm really happy about it. Because it's the same as the CompCape, right? Like, the CompCape rework, they didn't want to lock best in slot cape for combat behind doing all the content in the game. You don't want to get these benefits from the Max Guild behind looked at behind all the getting all the skills to 99.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that the max guild will still be useful in some way.
Oh, it'll be useful. It's the one-click teleport to the GE. It's got a bonfire. Yeah,
exactly. Well, the PVM hub will get a bonfire. So
yeah, true.
We'll see, but I'm happy about this change. I think it is a good decision to move this around, and I think it will actually work out for the better for everyone.
Yeah. And he winds the message off by saying, I hope each and every one of you has a wonderful Christmas break and enjoyable holiday season. Enjoy the company of good people and good eats. Thank you in advance for your support and patience. We will catch up very soon. Let's move on to the patch notes then for this week, because there's actually a couple of interesting ones that the PVM crowd will be interested in. Starting off, users will no longer experience dead inputs in specific combat situations. And this is what the community, of course, is called dead clicks. And they think they finally found the issue on this one. And
can we get
reports,
a round of applause?
Yeah.
We need sound effects.
It's a very, very obscure bug from this. They brought in a discussion from Mod Hunter and Harker on this that said when the keyboard input system RuneScript sets a keybind, it sets an ignore already held flag. So translating what this means is that when you are using the keyboard and you're using a keybind, it will set that ignore already held flag for that keybind. And the idea behind this is that it prevents buttons from being pressed before the interface is loaded and usually isn't noticeable. And the idea behind this is that you don't want people pressing buttons in an interface when the interface hasn't been drawn out. If that makes sense.
Okay.
So it's that flag that was causing this. And the action bars use this, however, as the action bar needs to update when your backpack, worn, prayers, stats, and so on change, it ends up rebuilding itself a lot. And the dead clicks, or more accurately, dead key presses as they're called, seem to occur rarely when the action bar redrew in the same frame as input occurred, causing the ignore it held flag to be set just before the keybind was processed. Action bars have been updated to not set this flag when they rebuild, which we believe will solve these dead inputs.
Huh.
And I want to point something out here. Notice how the community called them dead clicks.
Yeah, but they're actually dead keybinds.
Dead keybinds. And yeah. Part of that is probably, you know, just the way that was talked about in the community parlance, having an impact on how the bug was being looked for. Because you hear dead click, you think it's something to do with a click on the screen or the action bar, but it was all to do with the keyboard. And if you're looking in the wrong place for a bug like this, you're not going to find it until someone says it's the keyboard. So it's...
It seems like someone that was like into PVM though would like instantly know that, because they know they're not clicking on their action bar.
Exactly. You know, I don't know what the reproduction for this was, but I can say from just, you know, knowing a bit about how complex some of these code bases can be, it would take a long time to find something like this.
It was a big deal. I mean, it was affecting an important aspect of the game. So,
yeah. And,
I mean, it's
and
good
I mean,
thing
flags are
it.
Usually simple one-line values that you set, so it's so easy to just gloss over it and realize that that flag is having a detrimental impact down the road. So this one was one that definitely would have taken a long time to find for anybody who was wondering about that, if they were just taking their time or if it really did take that long, and it really did take that long. All right, this next one, it's going to be interesting to see how people feel about this. Players can now buy dinosaur eggs for hunter marks from Irwinson at the Anachronia base camp. Both big game hunter and slayer dinosaur eggs are available to be bought, and you'll get a random egg.
I mean, I actually didn't think about this as a solution when we talked about, you know, how slow the eggs come in.
Yeah. And you know why they're able to do it?
This never crossed my mind.
You know why they're able to do it this way? Because when you're hunting big game hunter, creatures. You get, you know, on average one hunter mark per. Sometimes you get two, right?
Yeah, so, I mean, you're still doing big game hunter for this. Like, exactly. They actually found a really exactly. good solution to it.
But with this, Mod Breezy released some numbers for the animals. Hold on to your pants. Pre-release numbers for big game hunter were 1 out of 250. For dinosaurs, 1 out of 3,000. And for Jadinkos, 1 out of 1,000.
I knew that Jadinko stuff was... See, dude, I told you
and
you
I
were
got
lucky.
4 in 1,200. And crunching the numbers on that, I should have had a 70% chance of just getting one with that. So I did much better. But with the actual release, they were brought down to 1 out of 65 for Big Game Hunter, 1 out of 750 for Dinosaur Slayer, and 1 out of 500 for the Jadinkos.
That's better. That's better.
Yeah. And with 1 out of 65, you know, 80 hunter marks, sometimes you're getting two. That means that around every 65 dinosaurs, 70 dinosaurs or so, you're going to be able to go purchase an egg if you don't get one.
Well, see, that's fair. Like, that means, like, if you didn't get one, at least you can get one out of what the drop rate's supposed to be, right?
Yeah, and they're unchecked too, so I mean, I don't know what the values are right now, but you could go purchase one and put it up on the exchange. And you can sell them just like you can sell any other one too, so this adds value to Big Game Hunter, and it helps the ranch out of time, which I think is a perfect solution for this.
Yeah, I can't believe that we didn't think about this at all. But then again, like, I never thought about hunter marks because I'm not into being a hunter.
Right. And remember when Anachronia came out, I said, you know, there's, you know, you can purchase the upgrades, you can purchase the beta title, you can purchase the thing that resets the dinosaur cooldowns. But I said, beyond that, I mean, you do a rotation of dinosaurs like you do in Priv. There's really not much to purchase here. Lo and behold, now we have something to purchase there.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's what I think. That's what makes this an actually really good solution.
Yeah, and you know, it's going to provide constant replay value too for anybody going for 120 farming. Because I mean, the numbers that you can get on these dinosaurs, the XP is, you know, a good step up from what dragons are. But if you're a pure skiller, this is perfect for you. It just adds to that farming and herblore ecosystem that we talk about all the time. So
yeah.
I see nothing wrong with this, and I'm actually very pleased about it in retrospect. I'd be even more pleased if I was still going for 120 on this aspect.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't even see what would be controversial over that. I don't see a problem with it at all.
Also in patch notes this week, graphical improvements have been made to the Slayer armor so that it will now remove snow from a player if they remove a piece of the outfit as was intended. I never did pick this up. Did you pick up the Slayer armor?
No.
Okay. Because I know we always talk about cosmetics and the like, and I was just wondering if you did. Prevented 2 doses of adrenaline restoration type potions from being used between the cooldown ending and the new one. Activating, okay, kind of a little bit of a bug there to do with adrenaline, but not that we have issues with that with combat dummies in this day and age. Using Cinderbanes with weapon poison +++ applied when they correctly scale the poison damage above weapon poison +++.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so you weren't getting the right amount of poison damage. And a variety of untradeable items have had their noted counterparts made possible to be added to the Beast of Burden inventories, including things such as potions, the various Bainite ores and bars, urns, and sapling plant pots.
Okay, that's cool.
And, you know, see, this is the thing. I don't get why the urns are on there, but plant pots, I guess, make sense. Potions as well, but I don't know how you would unnote them in particular. And
I was
this
just
would
thinking
be
the same
useful.
Thing. I'm like, wait a minute, how are you going
to? Where would this be useful?
It in there? Yeah, I don't know. That's the whole. Yeah, that's the conundrum. Mm.
Huh. I mean, I see the ores and bars if you're taking them to the metal bank. But I don't know. Anybody out there have a use on that? If you do, let us know.
Yeah.
And finally, a world map and mini-map bank icon has been added to the bank chest at the Anachronia Farm, which many people didn't realize it was there on first launch. So that's good. That was added in. Alrighty, that's it for the patch notes this week. We do have one other tiny little thing, and that's the Archaeology Journal this time covering Warforge, which is another of the archaeology sites that we're going to be able to have a look at come January. So this one starts off talking about the crackpot wizards in Yunil, reporting a strange blue glow emanating from Ooglog. And what happens is that through the recent dismantling of the mobilizing army's arena, it disturbed the earth, and somehow this disruption must have attracted the source of the mysterious glow. A dozen or more excitable little creatures that have been named Time Sprites have appeared, and it seems they're just as interested in the history of Gielinor as we are. Interesting, eh? Time Sprites. And it goes on to say that they led us to a trove of the strangest artifacts, including shields, helmets, and mails, all decorated with tribal goblin symbols, but of such intricate design that they can't have been made by the goblins themselves. And this comes into the point where two of the area's most esteemed goblin experts have been sent off to provide some answers. And I'll just read this out here. Oi, stinky human Tony, why even ask Bent Nose? He know nothing about the proper goblin culture. He only care about the big high war god stuff. Probably ugly Bentnose should go live in the Warforge if he likes the War of Gods so much. You call when you have goblin stuff to buy. No more weird rubbish. And this was General Wartface. And now here's Bentnose's response. Why you send this to Wartface? He's too stupid to know about good strong weapons from the big high war god. Probably he's too stupid to even know about the Forge Wars. Pa. Next time you send the stuff straight to me, Spark Goblin will not like stinky Wartface. You can see the goblins fighting there as per usual. You know, nothing really comes out of it until a human intervenes with this. But it later comes up that the name has cropped up in quite a few of the Feldup Hills histories. And the initial idea behind it, that it was a military institution affiliated with Bandos and his armies, but the records don't say much about what went on there. And then this comes the point where somebody intelligent who has an excellent knowledge of goblin culture and no desire to bash someone over the head with artifacts, they find that they would need to have a look. And with this, it says, yours a friend. And I don't know in particular who they're talking about, but it says, you do not know me, but I know much about you. For example, I know that your investigation has led you to the Warforge. So with this, we've seen, of course, the Stormguard Citadel and now the Warforge. These are two of the dig sites that we're going to be able to look at when the archaeology skill comes out. And, you know, we were talking a bit in pre-shows that, you know, this is a tremendous amount of lore that's going to be coming in through this skill. And I know plenty of people who are going to be very, very happy about this.
Yeah, I was pretty impressed reading this. I was like, oh, I was kind of getting into it a little bit. Like, okay, that's cool.
Yeah, and you can tell we're slowly ramping up towards the launch of archaeology at the end of January. So,
well, and I'm just wondering, like, what's next? So we know that we'll have something about the avian season now. It looks like the goblins. Are we going to get something on the Icians? Could it?
Yes,
could we?
Yes, that has been confirmed at Runefest.
Oh, man. So,
and we know there's going to be one in the wilderness, too, which has to be Zamorak-related. And with this, you have, of course, the four factions of the initial God Wars. And keep in mind, this is going back to the Second Age, which before the Third Age is when the last God War was. So this is what the politics and geopolitics of Gielinor, I guess you could say, looked like in the Second Age, is what we're going to be unearthing with all this.
But there's supposed to be talk of a God Wars like remastered or
Potentially. That's something they could do. We don't know what that's going to be, if that's going to happen. But we do know that God Wars Dungeon 3 about the Elder Gods is coming next year. So it'll be.
Oh, that's. Okay. So
we know that one's coming for sure.
So that could tie into all this, too.
Yeah, it definitely could. I mean, they could bring some kind of archaeology aspect into that. And then, I mean, there's so many games out there that tie their storyline to their quest lines, but I don't know if they ever tie them to their skill progression like this.
Yeah, that's...
Like, I haven't done much of the ESO campaign. Does it do that, or...?
No.
Okay.
I mean, they have their own story. Like, you know, your crafting does it, but it's not.
But it's not nearly as big as this.
No.
All right. Fair enough. Well, then, if you guys want to read the rest of this, just head on over to the RuneScape webpage and you can find it. It's called Archaeology Journal Warforge. And there's the last segment of updates in 2019. So let's... give a quick thanks to our Patreon supporters, then we'll move on to tech news. So this week I'd like to thank Brock H., Cameron, Cass, Christian S., Darren L., Diana, Jason S., Joe M., a new arrival, Kyle, Rastafa, Rippeth, Seth W., the Naked Captain, Tom V., and Zez. Thank you all of you for your support. It truly does mean the world to us. And if you're wondering what we're talking about, you can check out our Patreon page at patreon.com/RSBNB, and there you can support the podcast. We have three tiers to choose from. For as little as $1 a month, you get a special mention in our show notes. You get early access to the notes. You also get to vote on the topic of the monthly bit, and you can, of course, help fund the cost for hosting and production of RSBNB Update. For $3 a month, you get a special mention at the start of the month and access to high-quality stereo AAC versions of the show. And for $5 a month, you receive a shout-out every week on the show expressing our thanks, and you gain exclusive access to the outtakes that we use for the clip show at the end of the year, which at this point is imminent. But, you know, what we also have with this, we also have our monthly bit, which is our bonus show where we talk about very in-depth community issues or game design-based issues in RuneScape. The last one was on achievements, and that one was just excellent. So that one was great. And for the start of January, being that we've been around 10 years and it's the end of the decade, we have just recorded a special decade RuneScape in review where we talk about the entire span of RuneScape going back to 2010. Talked about every major update that came out, things that changed the way we play the game, the high points and the low points. Believe me, there were definitely a few of those. Yeah, and David and Earth joined us on that episode. That was good fun to record that.
We did so good with the balance there and having to, I loved it.
Yeah, and I mean, the best part about it was is that we got to, you know, really see in retrospect about where we're at and what we thought was the high points of RuneScape and what the most pivotal years were for all of us. And, you know, it comes back to I'm not going to spoil it, but it just comes back to the fact that we're in such an interesting place right now. But there were also many interesting years in the past, too, and we cover all of that. So if that sounds interesting to you, that'll be available for download in the first week of January. Also, for Inside RSBNB Update, we're going to be trying something new in the new year with this, so stay tuned for that. We have something we want to try, and hopefully you guys will enjoy it. Think we should spill the beans on that right now?
Why not? Early Christmas present, right?
Yeah. We're going to try a variety show in January. Rather than talking about the update of the week, what we'll do as one of the Patreon features is we will go out beyond the core update of the week. We'll maybe give a 5-minute rundown of what the update of the week was, but at that point we'll start doing the variety stuff. We'll cover what the community is talking about, what the memes are popular, any kind of interesting hot burning issues that are happening at the time. with that. And it'd be interesting to hear your thoughts on that. So that'll come out in January. We'll also have the RSBNB Update Roundtable in January as well, the second Saturday of that month, as we get ready for archaeology. And should we reach the mythical $99 a month tier, we'll, of course, be doing movie night in the RSBNB Discord, where, you know, I imagine Hannes will want to watch a Star Wars movie, but also bring some Star Trek into the mix, too.
Yeah, little ebony and ivory living together in harmony.
That's right. Perfect time of year to do that. But if you want to learn more about this, the Patreon option, or how to subscribe or access the entire back catalog of monthly bits, just head on over to patreon.com/RSBNB. And thank you once again to our supporters. We really appreciate you.
Thanks, guys.
All right. We don't have any discussion topics for this week, so we're just going to move straight into tech news right now. And this is a bit of an interesting one because, I don't know, do you have any smart home devices?
I have that thing from Amazon.
I assume, you know, I assume you're trying not to issue the hot word, right? But, you know, as it turns out, Amazon, Google, and Apple are all working on something called Project Connected Home over IP. And the idea behind this is that they want to form a group that enables modern smart home devices to work together and talk together with all of the different hubs out there and all the different devices, all the way down to, you know, the Philips smart light bulbs. Because right now, as it is, if you buy, for example, a Google Nest product, you can't use it with Apple's HomeKit, or you can't use it with Amazon Alexa. Or if you, for example, had an Amazon Echo, it doesn't talk to Apple and vice versa. So what they want to do is they want to effectively put together a standard that will allow all these devices to work together, and, you know, just so that you don't need to be left out in the cold, so to speak. So, you know, I think this is pretty big for all these companies to do, because it also involves something called the Zigbee Alliance, and that includes companies such as IKEA, Legrand, NXP Semiconductors, Samsung, Schneider Electric, Signify, which is formerly Philips Lighting, Silicon Labs, Somfy, and Wulian, which, I mean, we've never heard of half of these. But nonetheless, the idea is to just make it so that all of these devices can communicate in a way that effectively makes it a better end goal for consumers. And what makes it even more interesting is that they want to use an open source approach for development, so that anybody, any company who wants to, will be able to join in with this and have their products just work with all of them. And I think you and I can both say that having an iOS device and having an Amazon Alexa and maybe having some Nest products along the way, it creates a disconnect because they're not able to really talk to each other, right?
I guess. I mean, I don't know. Two things, Shane. Number one, what the hell is IKEA going to be talking about? Like, I mean, it just took me like 3 hours of watching my wife put a piece of furniture together. Like, what's it going to do? Whistle? Like, I don't get it. I mean, I don't know. But
I don't know. Don't they sell electronics or something there?
I don't know. The only thing I've ever seen from IKEA, it comes in a box and you got to put that together, and there's always not enough screws and the holes don't match up. But hey, all I know is when this many companies get together, somebody's getting screwed. Like, I'm not sure where it's at.
Yeah, I don't have an,
have you
I don't
ever
have an
seen,
answer to that, yeah.
But I mean, but really, that it's usually does. It's usually not good for a consumer.
One of the other things
this many agree
they say they want to do is with, you know, taking it to the IP spec, the same spec that the internet uses. It also enables the devices to use end-to-end secure communication between them.
Well, I mean, that's good, but could it be that once they can all talk, then they're all going to know each other's data about you, and it's going to be really easy to figure you out at that point.
Yeah, and you know, with that, I think it comes to the Googles and the Apples and the Amazons of the world to ensure that the data can't be shared with, you know, some little device that a random company makes.
But see, maybe that's what it's all about. That's why they're all in it. They're like,
well, if that was the case, why isn't Facebook in it?
Well, they don't have any of those kind of devices, yeah. Do they?
Yeah, that's right. Not yet.
Not yet. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. And, you know, I wanted to put this in there because it's really frustrating having a Nest device and not being able to communicate with it as effectively as you could if it was something that Apple's HomeKit supported off the bat.
See, I don't really have the same problem because I can connect my phone to my Amazon device and use my phone, and that's like...
Right, through an app.
Yeah.
But this is talking about, you know, say if you had a video doorbell, being able to wire it in to Apple's Home application, which you can't do right now if you have a Ring video doorbell, to my knowledge.
Okay.
And I know you definitely can't with the Google ones. So.
Okay.
That's what this aims to alleviate.
It's good, but I'm guessing there is a price somewhere. There is a price.
It's not making itself immediately clear.
Yeah, it's got to be there, though. I think it's your data. It has something to do with
your data. Yeah, and you know, we are in the era where data is everything. So.
Yeah.
All right. Next piece of tech news is one that you have been looking forward to for a while, and this is the launch of the new Microsoft Edge for Windows 10. And, you know, everybody is happy with Chrome, and that's fine. And, you know, Microsoft has had a really colored history with their internet browsers because back in the day they had Internet Explorer that was bundled in so tightly with the operating system in 98 and XP that you couldn't remove it, so much so that Microsoft got sued for that. Then they started decoupling things, and they had various later iterations of Internet Explorer that were better but still rather crap. And then, you know, they brought out this new version of Edge when Windows 10 came out with its own rendering engine, which, for anybody who's not aware, a rendering engine is effectively what draws the pages that you see on your screen based on the back-end code of the website. So that's what the rendering engine does. And, you know, Microsoft announced earlier this year that they're going to be rebuilding Edge from the ground up, and they're going to be using Chromium for the rendering engine, which is the same thing that powers Google Chrome.
Yay.
And it was announced this week that the new Edge will launch on January 15th through a Windows update. So it's not going to be bundled that tightly with the Windows operating system, but you will still need Windows 10 from April of 2018 or newer in order to be able to use it. And, you know, tell the listeners why you found this so important for you, or why you found Edge more usable than Chrome.
Oh, well, for me, I mean, so Edge... I don't know if it's because it's Microsoft, but if I put my computer to high contrast, that will actually work in the browser, whereas that doesn't work in Chrome. I have to use a different like Chrome extension. But then at the same time, there are a bunch of Chrome extensions that make things easier on certain websites that I can't use for Edge that I'll be able to use them now, which is nice.
So it's going to be an accessibility thing then.
Yeah. And I'm guessing there's going to be there's usually a lot more than just what we know. There's usually a lot more when they come out.
Yeah.
Once you dig into it.
Yeah, once you dig in and the like. So.
Yeah, but just those couple things are...
Worth it for you.
Yeah.
And it's also worth noting that Microsoft is already accepting extensions for the new Edge, and it will be able to use you ready for this? Extensions that are built for Chrome or Chromium from other marketplaces, such as the Chrome Web Store. So every extension that works for Chrome will work for the new Edge.
See, that's great. Yep.
And, you know, that's what some people have just wanted. So it makes sense to do it that way, I think. Also, with this, there's going to be 100 extensions that are, you know, just based from the previous Edge that are going to be available from launch, but there's going to be many more that you'll be able to bring in with this Chrome feature as well. And so this will be coming in the middle of January for everybody who uses Windows 10. I don't know if I'll swap from Chrome, but it'll be something interesting definitely to see if it passes muster, because, you know, Microsoft has been so far out of the web browser game for many, many years, and it'll be interesting to see if they can mount a comeback with this and, you know, challenge Chrome on the Windows side.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if anything would ever, like, challenge them, but Edge really isn't a bad browser. Like, I've been using it since Windows 10. I mean, you know, granted, it's an accessibility issue, but it's not as bad as what you would think.
Yeah, and, you know, I think the things it needs to be successful is it needs to be fast. It doesn't need to hog resources, and it needs to be stable, because, you know, people can get by with, you know, tens and tens of tabs in Chrome and not skip a beat with that. And if Edge is able to do that and manage that well, it'll have a chance. It'll have a chance.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never had too many, but yeah.
Yeah, same. I can't stand having multiple tabs, many tabs open that, you know, you don't know what to do with, so. And our last piece of tech news is talking about the end of the decade. In particular, what would have happened if back in 2010, if you would have invested $1 in Bitcoin? If you invested $1 in Bitcoin at the start of the decade, that would now be worth more than $90,000.
But what can I invest $1 in right now that will give me $90,000 in 10 years?
I don't know. I will
do that.
If anybody knows that, I mean, that would definitely be something good to do and share on this podcast. But
like, what's the new stupid idea that it's going to end up not being stupid?
Yeah, and you know, that's something everybody is always asking. So just for a bit of clarity on this, a Bitcoin is right now valued at about $7,000, right? So if you factor that in, you would have been able to buy around 12 or 13 Bitcoins back then for $1, and that would have morphed to the value that it is today.
And that's down from its height.
Yeah,
right?
It like used to, 2 years 12. Ago, it was 20,000. It peaked at 20,000. And, you know, I thought by this time it would have either disappeared or we'd have some kind of regulation around it, because it's, for all intents and purposes, it is cash on the internet that is not traceable, just like regular cash is not traceable. And it's largely unregulated, too. And, you know, I would have thought governments would have wanted to step into that, but nobody's really touched it. I think the people who are involved really just don't understand it.
They're old white people, Shane. They still have VCRs. Those VCRs still flash 12:00.
Yeah.
Like, that's what we're talking about here, Shane.
Yeah. And, you know, I think the biggest thing that would have propelled it forward is if the Libra cryptocurrency had continued. But, you know, they had many of their big backers pull out, like Visa, PayPal, and MasterCard. So at this point, it's just looking like the Libra initiative is just going to kind of fizzle and die by the wayside, I guess you could say.
Well, yeah. I mean, it might have had a chance. I feel like maybe with any other company, but there was no way.
Yeah,
that Facebook could make that work, because they.
No, hey, we have all your data. Give us your wallet.
Your money too. Yeah, there's just no
Granted, it would, and you know, we say that, but we need to make the caveat that it is a cryptocurrency. It would have been 100% secure, and you would have only been able to spend that. But they would have been the arbiters of that currency, and you would have had to ask them for permission to unlock it and spend it. Because I don't think there was a way for you to download it. Because with Bitcoin, there are exchanges now where you can put all your Bitcoins in a what's called a wallet, which makes sense because that's where you normally put your cash. And you can download that wallet and store it on your computer somewhere.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's
what Bitcoin is. So.
Right. And, well, the Libra wasn't it was not crypto. It was backed by all the major financial institutions. So it was the same as, it's the same as currency. It's not
so
the same.
If there was one that was going to take off, it would have been that. But I think we're very lucky that it did not. So.
Yeah.
All right. That's it for tech news this week. There's one big thing that I didn't mention in the RS segment, and that's that the Java client has been sunset this week.
Yep. It went.
And, I mean, that's kind of tech news, so we can kind of down with engineering.
That's true. No, I'm – well, with the daily challenge, yeah.
Oh.
Rip. Same time.
All right. Fair enough. And, I mean, I haven't heard anyone complain yet. I haven't heard anyone in Friends Chat complain yet. Uh-oh. So, I mean, I think that was time. So.
It's fine. It had a good run.
It had to happen. It had to happen.
It didn't die. It just went to a farm in the country.
Went to a better place. Yeah. Went to a better place. All right. We're going to wrap up the show. Yeah, it's a shorter show, but I mean, that's okay. We're headed into the holiday season. You guys have lots of
RSVP. It's a shorter show, but it's a longer. It's been a long year.
It has. It has. I was just looking at our year in review special that we got to do, and oh boy.
Yeah.
Lots of stuff to talk about there.
Lots of stuff.
So let's do some achievements. I'll start us off on December 17th. We had Black Nexican, interesting, with 99 ranged on December 17th. Eric's with 99 fishing. Claudep with 99 divination. X-Gwen Yvar X with 99 magic. Thieves with 120 Herblore on the 16th. Sebage or Seb got 120 fishing on the 15th. Doc Hawk got 99 smithing. X-Gwen Yvarx again with 99 attack. And I'll let you handle the rest of them.
We have Mythica UK with 99 cooking on the 14th. Rastafa with 120 Herblore and farming on December 14th. As an Iron Man. What do you think about that, Shane?
That's really good.
There's your ecosystem, right? Yeah.
Working as intended.
Then we had Yitzi with 99 rune crafting on the 14th. We have Evin with 99 fletching on December 13th. We have Time with 120 Herblore on December 13th. Disciples with 99 prayer on December 12th, and Mythica UK with 99 slayer on December 12th.
Nicely done, everyone. That wraps up the achievements for 2019. I'll talk now a bit about our holiday schedule for this one, because, you know, this is something that we need to talk about, because we like to do RSVP update, but if there's no updates to talk about, there's not much we can talk about, right? But I am pleased to say that we'll be back on December 27th with our clip show, which is, of course, the funniest and the outtakes moments of RSVP update from both during in the show as well as pre and post show when we pull those ones out. There's definitely some in there. That's going to be a fun one to hear. We always love these clip shows, don't we?
Yeah, but I'm kind of afraid because I haven't heard any of them. So, I was there, but I don't know what has been pulled, so.
Well, I'll just say that one of the more recent ones involves Disney Plus.
Oh, yeah. Right on.
Then on January 3rd, I believe it is. Yeah, I think it's the 3rd. We'll have a RuneScape 2019 in review episode where we look at everything that happened in 2019 because, you know, it was a big year. There's, you know, lots of major changes at Jagex and the way updates were brought to us. We had this big update called the Mining and Smithing Rework. We had Anachronia, 120 Herblard Farming, and lots of other stuff sprinkled in between. So we'll be running down everything that happened in 2019. And for our Patreon supporters, we will also have the Decade in Review covering everything to do with RuneScape going back to 2010, where we'll talk about the major updates of the time, the highs, the lows, what updates we thought changed the way we played the game, and just in general thoughts on the last 10 years. And we've been around that entire time, and we have some people who also have been around that entire time. Earth and David joined us. We have already pre-recorded that one, and I can tell you that it is fantastic hearing from those two. So
that was a good time.
Very fun.
That was a really good time. Fun.
All right. Pick of the week time. And I'm going to end off the year with a pick of the week that actually goes back to the beginning of the decade. Except it's brand new on PC.
Huh?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And you know what that is?
No.
That is the Master Chief Collection, Halo Master Chief Collection.
Oh, for shit, PC, yes!
Has finally made its way to PC on Steam.
Yeah, yeah, I have friends that's been playing the crap out of it.
And, you know, when it launched, it was the second or third most popular game being played on Steam.
I don't doubt it. A little nostalgia trip for people.
Huh? Yeah. And, you know, you can buy Reach on your own if you wanted to do that, Halo Reach, but you can get the entire Master Chief Collection, and this includes Reach, Halo Combat Evolved, i.e. the first one, the remastered version of it, Halo 2, Halo 3, ODST, and Halo 4. They have only released Reach thus far, but they will be releasing all of those other games that I mentioned, and it will be in that package available for that. So you can pick that up, and you'll be able to play all of those games for the price. I'm not sure what it is in the U.S., probably $40. It's 50 Canadian, but you can get it on Steam or you can get it in the Microsoft Store. And, you know, this is just a game that is good to play with lots of people because if you had custom maps and custom game types on your Xbox saves, you can bring those into Reach. And you can play those as if you had them yesterday. And they just work flawlessly.
Wow. That's cool.
And what's more with this is they also optimized it for PC because when it first launched, it was a 60 FPS game in 1080p for the original Xbox 360. That's where Reach came from, believe it or not. But now you can play it up to 4K and you can, just like any other PC game, max out your FPS settings and whatnot. So you can just enjoy it however you enjoy a modern video game, despite the fact it was built for 1080p, 60 FPS back then. So it's all here. And that's the pick of the week. And we had some fun playing it last weekend. And, you know, that's why it's the pick of the week, because it's something people have been waiting for years in order to purchase.
Yeah, I'm almost embarrassed to say I've never played Halo, but
yeah, it's a classic shooter in that regard. So I mean, your mileage will vary based on however well you do with shooters.
Well, it depends. I do a little better in a campaign than I do, you know, go on a map. Well, by co-op, I can hold my own.
And you know what? Speaking of co-op and campaigns, that's actually one of the big highlights about this one, is that all of the campaigns have co-op. The first two games have co-op for two players, but all the other games have co-op for up to four players.
You know, maybe it's time. Give it a look.
Yeah, and I mean, it comes back to the custom games for Reach as well. We had so many fun ones last weekend on that, so that factors into it. The games themselves are great, so it's just definitely something that everybody should pick up if you enjoy shooter games. It is one of the classic shooters out there, just like Half-Life is. So that's the pick of the week. All right, what have we been up to? What have you been up to in RS?
Dressing like I got in my Christmas outfit like a snowman.
Oh.
And I got Buddy out, you know, because you got to have Buddy out for the holidays. And then I've been, you know, stealing for charity. But, yeah, just thieving.
That's great. That's great.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else?
That's really all I've done in RS this week. Yeah. A lot of thieving, because I'm only 8 mil away, right? So a little over 8 mil, 120. So we're cruising.
All right. Well, as for me, I've been continuing on down Yak Track, which is, you know, many people would say, oh, the tasks are grindy and whatnot, but I'm really enjoying it. I'm really enjoying it. I'm on task 26. I just finished that one, so I'll be on to task 27. That's the one that it allows you to follow someone for 2 minutes, which is one of the weird ones. Or you can go to a number of the pubs out there to do it. But, you know, aside from that, I have been operating my dinosaur breeding project so far. That's going really well. And, you know, the egg prices have taken a hit with the change this week, but that's fine. And so I'd say that I'm moving into the phase where the farm is becoming more, or the ranch is becoming a more casual thing. But I really enjoy those fire-making tasks for the Yak Track, right? And that's the one that's up next. And
oh, cool.
I use my pitch can for it. And I was refilling my pitch can yesterday. Because you have to go to char and do charge training. You get 100 pitch every time you do it. On my second shape that I did, I got another pitch can. I bet you don't know what those sell for in this day and age.
Probably like 30 mil, isn't it?
No, a full pitch can sold for 12.5.
Oh, 12.5. Okay, it's still, dude. 12.5 on a just random. Jesus, you're lucky. Damn. If you ever got into PVM, watch out. Wow.
I mean, I don't know how it happens. It just feels like there's this aura of luck that's happening, whether it be with the pre-release eggs or the pitch can.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You need to learn some bossing and start going with David.
But, you know, that was a good laugh, and it's just so weird seeing almost 300 mil in my bank now after a month, not even a month after the farming update hit. That's how lucrative that's been.
Wow. And you didn't even keep them all for yourself.
No, I didn't. Huh. No. I fulfilled a few requests on the breeding list, but beyond that, I've been selling them. Last I saw, they were down to 50, and I don't know what they're down to after the update this week, because I don't really care that much about the price. But, yeah. Very fun. But I think that's everything for this episode of RSBNB Update, unless you have anything else.
Nope, that is it, my friend.
Okie dokie, then. You can find full show notes at update.rsbnb.com. You can subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Pocket Casts, YouTube, anything. Just go to update.rsbnb.com/subscribe to subscribe and have it delivered automatically to you. We like that. That helps with the rankings on the various podcast aggregators. And as I mentioned, we have our Christmas schedule, with December 27th being our clip show, and on January 3rd, the 2019 in review episode, as well as the decade in review for Patreon supporters. So with that being said, we'll see you guys in the new year for another episode of RSBNB Update, and everybody have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
See ya.